this week on Writers, Inc.
But it's also weird that the publisher is definitely making more money out of doing this.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories. All have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, it's Christine Daigle.
I'm Jenna J.P. J. Kevin Tomlinson.
And I'm J.D. Barker. Welcome to Writers, Inc. Thanksgiving edition.
Yeah.
You guys ready for the holiday? We're recording a day early, so everything's off.
I know. I've been doing that all day. I've already recorded this week's Wordslinger podcast. I've recorded the Substack video that I do. So I've been recording and editing all day so that I can take the rest of the week off.
Yeah.
So you're taking time off. Like, is that the norm for you when there's a holiday? Or like, I'm just going to work through it. It's just another day to me.
I'm going to write, but that's it. I'm not. I don't want to have to do any other. I don't want to do video stuff while I'm at family. You know, I can do it. I've done it before, but I get the side eye from Kara, so I'm trying to play nice, trying to be good husband, good son-in-law, all that.
Yeah, so. Thanksgiving is always a weird one for me because I live in Canada, but I'm U.S. citizen, and most of my family is over there, so I have to work, and my son has to go to school, and then we get to rush over the border to join in the festivities a bit late. But it's not like I get off work at 3:30, so we'll be there by 4. It's not far. Like, it's ridiculously close. It probably will take us 20 minutes to get there, depending on the border, which is wild to think about. Yeah.
That is pretty wild.
Yeah.
I mean, so, okay, I posed this question in a text message earlier to everybody, but we were going to talk about how you keep writing when your schedule gets hectic for like conferences and holidays and that sort of thing. JD, your schedule and my schedule are pretty similar when it comes to conferences, but.
Yeah. So I write first thing in the morning. So it doesn't really matter where I am. I always try to knock that out before I do anything else. So if I'm at a conference, if I've got to be somewhere, let's say at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll make sure I get up 2 or 3 hours earlier to get the writing done before whatever that first commitment is. Because otherwise, if I don't get it done, then I'm kind of half-assing whatever I have to do in between. And my brain is thinking about the writing that I didn't get done. Yeah. But if I knock it out first thing, I feel like I got it accomplished. I feel like the heavy lifting for the day is behind me. And I can do everything else. It gets a little tricky, you know, like Thanksgiving, holiday, stuff like that, if we've got family in town. But I'll try to duck into my office and close that door before anybody, you know, gets a hold of me. Just try to knock it out.
Yeah.
I write at night, so it's harder. I mean, cause I have a job and I can't get up any earlier. I already get up at like 6:15. I can't get up any earlier to write. Yeah. So I usually write at night. So it gets hard with holiday stuff. Like when we were at Author Nation, I wrote 2 chapters, which was kind of pathetic for me. I wrote 2 days out of however many days that was, 6.
Yeah.
But also because of the socializing, like I just get wiped. I'll come back and I'm just like done. I have nothing left.
Right.
In my gas tank after socializing.
Okay. But I want to correct something here because it is not pathetic that you got 2 chapters written.
2.
Okay. You need to celebrate that because it's hard to do when you're
at
these things. I'm like JD.
Can't celebrate. That's weak. You should have done 4.
No.
I thought it was pretty weak.
Uncle Kevin. Uncle Kevin says that was good work and you can always improve, but don't detract. I'm like JD. I get up early. And, so I write early in the mornings. I actually kind of prefer when I'm traveling to be the first one up anyway, cause you know, it's quiet. There's nothing else. No one gets up early when you're on vacation except Kevin. But I also have, I kind of took on this whole years ago. I started this whole practice of this whole write anywhere philosophy. So I've always got something with me that allows me to do some writing, and I have been known to write entire books using just my iPhone and my thumb. So I can write from anywhere, anytime. So if I disappear into the bathroom for a lengthy period of time, that may be what's happening. I may be knocking out a chapter. You just never know.
I do not want
So,
All right. Thanksgiving week. What is in the news?
well, let's serve up. Here's a turkey for us. Lakeside Book Company buys B&T distribution arm. Lakeside Book Company has acquired Baker & Taylor Publisher Services, adding distribution and order-to-cash services to its existing book manufacturing operations. The deal includes Baker & Taylor's print-on-demand facility in Ashland, Ohio, and brings more than 250 small presses under the Lakeside umbrella. Small and mid-sized publishers will now have a single financially stable partner for printing, storing, and distributing their books through an integrated supply chain. B&T lives on, in a way.
That's good news for libraries, anyways, I
Yeah.
think. Yeah.
Does that include their whole library distribution deal, though? Because
I don't know. Publisher,
I
is that
keep hearing
different? Is
other.
that separate than their library? I should have looked at that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look at it either. I'm
I
sorry,
was
but I.
thinking it did, and now that you said that, I'm like, maybe it doesn't.
Because I just saw another news item from a different channel about how there's, the whole library distribution side is kind of taking double whammies right now and getting a bunch of hits because a lot of that stuff's shutting down. So I don't know how we're going to get our books into libraries in the near future.
Yeah.
Overdrive. It's pretty much the only thing left.
Overdrive.
I have Baker and Taylor for distribution on that side, and I have yet to receive any emails from them about any of this. Like since their downfall, the purchase by Lakeside, like they haven't communicated any of this to the various people that they're working with.
Yeah. If not for Draft to Digital, I don't think I would have even known that any of this was happening. They kind of sent out sort of an update in their little newsletter. And I before that I The only other source of information I have on it is when Christine found a news story. So
I
you
try.
heard it here first, everybody.
I try to keep you guys all up to date on what's going on.
Right. Well, okay. Because we don't talk about this guy enough, James Patterson and Bookshop.org launch a prize for debut writers. James Patterson and Bookshop.org are launching a new $15,000 literary prize for full-length debut books. All nominations and selections will be made by booksellers working in qualifying independent bookstores. A runner-up will receive $10,000, and nominations open on January 5th, 2026.
I think that second sentence is key because what it basically says is do not email JD Barker to try and figure out how to get in on this contest.
You are
No.
too late.
Go to
I've already drafted
bookshop.org
my email.
January 5th and figure out how to enter. I think it's cool that they have booksellers judging. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's maybe the way it should be. I mean, I don't know. The booksellers, I don't know. I don't know. I go back and forth on that idea. Are they the best qualified? Because
Well,
sometimes
they're
they're.
kind of tastemakers, right? Well, we're going to talk to Bob about why we have booksellers in a minute, but I mean, they're kind of the tastemakers. When I go into my local bookshop, they know what my taste is and they recommend stuff and
Okay,
they
good.
find
That's a
those
fair point.
undiscovered gems and they're the ones hand selling them. So, yeah,
Yeah.
why not? They
Yeah,
probably
and
read
they're objective.
more than
They're
most people.
objective too,
Yeah.
right? So
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
think that's important.
Presumably.
Yeah, well, because I mean, a lot of these contests, like when I was with ITW, like the board members or the people, at ITW were basically deciding on what would make that the shortlist for the awards, and that's kind of the same thing at every one of these conferences. So then it just turns into this popularity contest, and the authors know that, and so it becomes who you're chasing, who you're emailing, so you can get a leg up by basically creating this little quiet marketing campaign going after those judges. So
Yeah.
bookstore owners, like they're basically flagging the stuff they feel they can sell, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, final story. BNN teams with A24 on retail sites and events. A24 is launching the quote A24 shop, retail sections inside major Barnes and Noble stores featuring books, films, vinyl, and curated merchandise from the studio. The partnership includes national in-store events, beginning with a Union Square conversation celebrating Eleanor Coppola's posthumous memoir. Part of A24's growing publishing line with Mac. This is BNN's first nationwide activation with a brand, with A24 shop rolling out in flagship locations and expanding to more stores in 2026.
So is this the studios trying to figure out a way to make up for the money that they're losing on some of the other projects? Like feature films are down, streaming, they're not getting paid what they used to. Are they just branching out
Yeah.
into retail?
That could be. When I'm looking at the things that they're offering, and they're including things like, vinyl, for example. I am personally seeing a resurgence of vinyl in the world. Like, I'm interested in it. I'm planning to get another record player. I gave up on vinyl, a couple of decades ago because my entire vinyl collection got destroyed. It just broke my heart. But now I'm like back. And what I'm noticing is that stuff is prolific. It's everywhere. You can get record players, albums, kids are buying this stuff. I think there's a resurgence for interest in things like that. So maybe what A24 is doing is capitalizing on that interest. And Barnes & Noble's kind of that's where you go for physical products like that now. So it makes sense to partner with them.
So my husband is an avid vinyl collector, has been for a long time. We have so much vinyl, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even know where it all is. But just like the prices on things have changed dramatically from when he could get records fairly cheap. Now, like, people want them again and the prices have gone up. So yeah, maybe that's trying to look at a new way to capitalize on what people are interested in again. But I don't know. I think it's interesting that Barnes and Nobles is in for that too. There seems to be some bundling going on with different types of retail with bookstores now. We talked about the fashion one last time, so I don't know.
Well, Barnes and Noble over the last couple of years, since they got bought out by private equity, they've been evolving in the stores. And I'd be curious what percentage of the store is actually still books. And, at this point, it's probably like 50, 60% or something like that books. But, there's a huge toy section now. They've always had the food, but that takes up a lot of the square footage in the store.
You have a story. Share it with the world. Ingram Spark offers everything you need to publish, promote, sell, and print your book. Reach millions of readers worldwide with powerful tools created for independent authors. Get started for free at ingramspark.com/learn more.
All right, JD, who is up this week?
This week, we've got Bob Lingle on. This one's a little different for us. Bob owns a fantastic bookstore in upstate New York called The Good Neighbor. He's also a fixture on TikTok, not only talking about new titles, but changes in the industry. He's going to fill us in on the changing publishing landscape, how it's impacted booksellers, and how things like moving into direct sales for booksellers or publishers is impacting things. So here he is, Bob Lingle.
Okay, Bob Lingle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you own a Good Neighbor bookstore in Lakewood, New York.
Yes.
Yeah, and you've been pretty vocal on social media about the risks of traditional publishers leaning into direct consumer sales. We've talked about it a bit on the show, and I would love to hear what is your main concern you think the industry is overlooking?
Well, I just to give a background, because I don't know what you've covered in the past, it was about 2 months ago at this point that I noticed an author that I follow that he just was kind of more of a TikTok personality, and then he had a book come out, and he had this video that led off with a lot of people are asking me where else I can buy the book besides Amazon. I'm like, oh, my ears perked up. I'm like, all right, great. He's going to direct people to independent bookstores. And then he said, there's a link in my bio where you can buy it directly. And I forgot which publisher he's published through. And I don't want to, I will name it one name later. I looked and like, oh, I'm like, that seems concerning. And then it was about a week after that I noticed in a shelf awareness article, it covered HarperCollins restructuring their sales department to have a focus on direct to consumer sales. And I'm like, well, that's really concerning. And then I noticed a lot more with HarperCollins, some more with Macmillan on TikTok of having promoted ads, authors specifically selling their books and kind of working on the hand of the publishers of, hey, you can buy this book directly from the publisher. I'm like, that's not great. And like, and there was also, TikTok influencers that then were linked up with the TikTok shop. And like I kind of enjoy the transparency of TikTok where they will show you the commission that the TikTok person is making. I'm like, well, I would make more than that selling the book. out of my store. So it's not like they're making a huge chunk of money, but it's also weird that the publisher is definitely making more money out of doing this. In response to it, I noticed this while I was going through the process of doing our spring and winter sales. And every time I'm going through catalogs in Edelweiss, I notice more and more frequently over the last couple of years, this author is huge on TikTok. They have this many likes, they have this many followers. I'm like, well, if you're going to start selling directly through TikTok, why would I care? I'm like, this is almost the opposite of a selling point because I know that you can use this author to just sell directly for you. So I had a couple conversations with our sales reps. It started with McMillan, because that was the first sales rep that I had a conversation with after I noticed that it was happening. And she asked me to write a letter that she could forward on to her sales director. So I wrote that letter, and then just being the squeaky wheel and obnoxious, I'm like, you know what? I feel like every sales rep needs this letter. So I sent it to all of my sales reps for all of the publishers. And then I also sent it to the American Booksellers Association, as well as my regional bookselling association, to just get the conversation started. After that, I ended up having, there was one conversation that I had with a sales manager for Penguin Random House, and that was a reassuring conversation. Penguin Random House has been great in terms of making sure that they take care of their independent bookstores. They know that their huge authors are going to sell books no matter what, where they have platforms to sell them. But for their mid-tier authors and less than mid-tier authors, it's the independent bookstores that discover those, that hand sell those, that recommend them to other bookstores to sell. So they understand that relationship, they appreciate that relationship, and they assured me that they wouldn't be doing that. But if they do, I will probably be, I will would probably find out before they do and to let them know. And in that letter, like, it wasn't just the concerns for independent bookstores, because what, and the concern that I had in there, was that this concerns me more than just the existence of like a big box store, Barnes and Noble, or even Amazon, because of the direct sales with TikTok. When you, it's a great tool for publishers. I don't want to sell it to them, but it is a great tool because in the TikTok shop space, people don't have to leave the website to go to Amazon or to go to Bookshop or to go to an independent bookseller's website to buy the book. They can buy it directly through there. And TikTok loves that because it's keeping them on their platform and driving sales and revenue for them. So it's just this overall concern. And people listening to this might ask the question of why wouldn't an independent bookstore just set up their own TikTok shop? And it's possible, but the feasibility of doing it that way, you have to supply so much information of like the dimensions of the book, the weight of the book, all of the different categories, and like there, it's just a laundry list of things that you have to do for one title. So there are some bookstores that will make a committed effort of like, I'm going to put five books on there. Where I think for publishers, they have the team available to just, they could put as much of their catalog on there as they want to, and it's just cutting us out of that picture entirely. And the other concern that I had in there for was for my sales reps, because if they're selling the books to us and then they're not selling the book, we have this obstacle of why would we buy the books through there? It's going to hurt their sales and commissions as well.
So as someone who doesn't use TikTok Shop, do they give favorability to people who pay for like advertising, or is it more organic?
It can be organic, and that's the thing, like with publishers finding influencers to just popular people of like, hey, you could write a book, or if there is a independently published author that has a huge following on TikTok, the publisher can find that person and just utilize their organic reach to connect to their customers directly. So there is a lot of that organic reach, but then there are also, I do see paid ads all of the time for HarperCollins and Macmillan have been kind of the worst offenders.
So then you would be in direct competition with the publishers, which doesn't seem
Yes.
to be a business model that makes any kind of sense to me.
No, it
No.
doesn't.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So there was something else that you touched on about, your sellers, and you're talking about it's not going to hurt big box stores. But I have to wonder, like, what happens to the book ecosystem? Because, like you say, when I go into my indie bookstore, they might have a few of the best sellers, but that's not predominantly what it is, right? They're in there for local tastes or for their taste to help you discover new books. What happens to debut authors, to mid-listers, if, I don't know, I feel like I'm trying to think about this. I've been thinking, if we sell direct from traditional publishers, does it hurt debut and mid-list authors? Does that go away? Are we only buying big authors? Or do big authors not even need a big box store? Like, what happens to all of that?
I feel like big authors, like currently established authors, are probably going to be fine. Like they will still sell the books the way that they traditionally sell the books because that model has worked for them. So why would they change that? My concern is just in terms of the quality, like beyond the getting cut out of the sales process entirely, but the quality of the books that could be out there of just because a person has a million followers or 2 million followers. Hey, let's give this person a publishing deal, and then the book that is birthed out of that process.
Because like book discovery is kind of the biggest strength of indie bookstores, right? So
Yes.
how do we weaken, I guess, discoverability for authors without, without
Yeah.
hand selling, without sales reps, those type of things? I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you do an indie next, right? So you talk about the books you like and
Yeah, I have just a weekly series. Like I'm very active across all of our social media channels, but about 3 years ago, I just started doing them. Like it was very generic, but it's caught on like in the TikTok space, but even like within my local community, people tell me that they look forward to our new week, new books videos. So each week, I mean, we have a stack of, I mean, the holiday season has just been insane. So it's been almost 50 to 60 books that have come into the store each week. So I will pick 10 to 15 of them to highlight in that video series. But yeah, I mean, I try really hard to not just push the best sellers. And when customers walk in, like, oh, like what's hot? And I'm like, well, like it depends on the bookstore that you're walking in. Generally, like the huge authors that now that we have a Target in our community, Walmart, where you can just walk in and find those best sellers at a deep discount, like it doesn't make sense. I will bring in a few copies just because I know customers that are committed to buying them from us and don't worry about the discount, will buy them from us, but they're not the main focus of like what I'm trying to find and get excited about hand selling to customers.
Some people argue that, people will always come into bookstores for the experience, but then they go and buy online, like you say, for that discount. Like, is that helpful if people are just coming in and then buying elsewhere? Like, that must, I mean,
Well,
I, if I was, that was me, I was like, that would drive me crazy.
yeah.
So I
It's,
just.
I don't see it as much, and I don't know because it's just something that I continuously have a conversation around. In addition to owning my store for the last year, I've worked full time for our Chamber of Commerce. So I am just 100% you need to buy from the local community. So I don't know that people that know me would dare come into the store to just window shop. And it's one of the concerns that I have with getting cut out of the TikTok ecosystem of people wanting to buy books from independent bookstores, because when TikTok became really popular during the pandemic and bookstores, it was the first year in like 20 years where there was more bookstores that were closing than opening. People became aware of like, oh, if we don't shop at these places, they close. And it became a very large conversation around that topic. So for the last 4 years, I would say we've seen such an uptick in customers coming into the store and shopping at an independent bookstore being like a cool thing to do. So that's why, like, the conversations that I've had with sales reps, like, we finally reached a place where we're cool again, if we ever were before. I mean, we're cool in terms of the reader space. It's a cool thing to come into an independent bookstore and find new books and find the ones that they have heard about online. We've reached that point, and now a few of the publishers are coming in and just kind of knocking our legs out from underneath us.
So like you said, it's kind of cool to come in, and indie bookstores are more than just book shopping. Like, what ripple effects do you think will affect book culture with this direct sell, like literary communities? I know there are in my bookstores other events that go on that are really community focused.
I feel like that's the advantage that I've continued to lean into, and what makes, like, there's always going to be Barnes and Noble, there's always going to be Amazon. Hopefully this TikTok thing doesn't become larger than what it is right now, but we're always going to have these struggles of competing with the convenience of shopping online. So it's really leaning into having more community events, having more reasons to have people come into the store for events, but to browse and have that experience.
And to be sure they're not going to get AI books, right? That's a
That's
problem
a whole
though.
nother topic. Yeah.
They're just flooded. We just were talking about this in one of the like home remedy spaces. 82% of those books were AI generated, which is insane. So
Yeah.
no AI generated books in indie bookshops, so that helps us too.
Yes. Yeah.
So they do have platforms like bookshop.org and those type of things to help people, find their local bookstores. Are there strengths or limitations with that you see?
I've had my store for 8 years, so that it's evolved a lot over that time. When I bought the store from the previous owner, our website was just a landing page with our store information and links to our social media, and we just had no online presence. After a couple of years, I spent 3 months building out our website through Square, which was just a huge process and undertaking with the number of titles that we had, and then the upkeep with it, and the trying to develop a traction with it that was not surpassing the amount of work that went into it. And it was around that time that I was struggling with, like, do I want to keep going with this? That Bookshop had rolled out, and I was at Winter Institute when Bookshop was, like, first proposing what it was and getting people to sign up as affiliates for it. So I signed up, I scrapped our original website, just went back to the homepage model. I'm like, this is fine, link to Bookshop, and this will be great. And it is an incredible partner for independent bookstores. And it got me to a place that between having Bookshop and then being more involved in TikTok, like, Instagram has been better recently, but TikTok did help me grow a larger presence across the country. So it got me thinking to, should I just be directing all of my sales to Bookshop, because I'm not able to sell the books that are on my shelves and ship them out to people. So I did invest in Indie Commerce, which is a platform run by the American Booksellers Association. And that has been huge for us personally. But I feel like Bookshop is a good place for smaller stores to start and explore and see the traffic that they can get without having to have that investment. And the commission that Bookshop gives is incredibly fair. They had increased what they initially had planned for the commission very quickly after they launched, because the pandemic also launched during that time. So to help be more helpful for independent bookstores, like, we were going to give you this percent, but we're going to give you this percent, and they never lowered it back down. So for it being a no cost thing, the commission is very fair, and it's great for small bookstores. And it was great for me to be able to have that, build that audience, and then just kind of grow out of Bookshop. We still have a Bookshop page that people still use on occasion, so it's nice to still have that as, like, oh, I have $50 that I can
Yeah.
deposit.
And
So,
you partner with Lero FM as well for audiobooks, which
yes.
I thought was interesting because audiobooks are a huge market, but of course, not really a tangible for bookshelves. So,
Yes.
how can readers, audiobook listeners support you that way?
And just that reminded me, Bookshop also launched ebooks.
Yeah.
And with our indie commerce site, so you can get ebooks through the Bookshop site in addition to physical books. But with any bookstore that's using indie commerce, it also links the ebook option for their affiliates to utilize. But Libro FM is also a great partner. It's for booksellers, it's like Christmas the first of every month because they give us a whole bunch of free advanced listening copies of books
Oh, nice.
to download. So that's always fun, but it is great. It's a really great partner for us to have. They will supply us with bookmarks that have, like, we can customize it so it has our store information on one side, Libro FM information on the other. The price point is exactly the same as Audible. And there's frequently make the change programs that they have where people can
Yeah.
get extra credits if they're showing that they switched from Audible to Libro FM. It's the bigger thing is just stores can do really well with it if they market it. Libro FM is still a very small team, so I'm excited when they get a larger marketing budget and can be an even larger combatant
Yeah.
into Audible.
Yeah, that's great. So we have a lot of authors that listen. So for those authors listening to this conversation, what steps can they take to support indie bookstores while still working within their publisher expectations for promotions and sales and those type of things?
Well, I know you work with J.D. Barker a lot, and he can tell you, and I'm sure you know it as you're on your own, and other authors know, even if they have a marketing division behind them through a publishing house, they're still going to have to do a lot of work on their own.
Yeah.
So there's still, like, J.D. Barker is one great example that he exists in my store because of the marketing that he had put together with his own ad agency, that of getting a letter from a serial killer for the 4MK series. I'm like, all right, we are going to carry these books. So finding interesting ways, like, to partner with your local independent bookstore or to find bookstores that kind of match the vibe of what books you're putting out into the world.
Yeah.
We receive, it's tough to break through the noise just to get to readers, and it's also tough to break through the noise to get to independent bookstores because there are so many authors that reach out to us, be it local or just independently published or even traditionally published, that are reaching out to us all of the time. And my inbox is just like, I can't carry all of you guys.
Yeah.
So making the case, like, you can do blanket emails, or I had interviewed Jay over the summer and talked about the ineffectiveness of postcards, and I don't know why all authors or so many authors use them. Like, it's
Yeah.
cheap, but I get a postcard, I'm like, it just gets mixed into the mail. So I wouldn't invest in postcards. But finding the bookstores that match what you're selling, who you think would connect well with
Yeah.
your books, because it's very obvious when you're getting a blanket email. So unless the pitch for the book is really good, it's not very likely to connect with us. The one piece of advice that I can give to avoid doing, and there was actually a small press publisher that reached out to me a couple days ago, and I was as nice as I could be, but they were bragging about the Amazon accolades that their books had received. And it was for, like, the email was meant for independent bookstores. I'm like, hey, this isn't a rebuke or a slap on the hand. I'm like, I just want to let you know that if this is your outreach, you're not going to connect with the audience that you're looking for. So don't mention Amazon. There are so many subgenres of Amazon that almost every author has become at one point, for a split second, an Amazon bestseller.
Yeah.
So experienced booksellers are aware of that, and that's not going to move the needle for us. So it's more so, why is your book going, like, what, explain to us what audience you're trying to get your book into the hands of, so it makes our job easier of, oh, like, I have those customers that are coming into my store. So yes, I will bring those books in to get that book into those customers' hands.
Yeah, it's so funny you said that about the postcards because I'm on the Authors Guild and I see, recently there was a thread about it. Oh yeah, send your indie bookstores postcards. That's Don't send
Don't
postcards. So,
send
I guess authors think that's the way to go. I've never sent a postcard, so
I mean, it's like, because I used to work on political campaigns, so I know
yeah.
just in terms of marketing, like a
Yeah.
postcard is a very cheap way to reach a lot of people. But because so many people use them and we get so much mail,
Yeah.
that it's just, unless it's in a really amazing postcard, which most of them aren't,
Yeah.
it's tough to.
So, how do you prefer an author contacts you, say, if they are interested in getting their books in your store or they want to set up a signing with you? How do you like them to reach out to you?
I mean, an email is generally best, even just like I've had, there was an author out of Buffalo, which is just an hour and a half
Yeah.
away, and it was just coincided with my wife had just read that author's book, and then she had identified different bookstores that she wrote a letter out to those people. So however you can make it into like a personal touch really stands out, even if it's just you actually signed your name instead of just having it printed or stamped on there. But handwritten notes go a long way. Obviously, your hands cramp, and there's over 1,000 different bookstores in the country, so you can't r write them all. But it does. You would probably have more success, but a somewhat limited reach
Somewhat limited
doing it that
reach.
way. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, there are a lot of indie bookstores and you kind of know the ones in your area. So how would you kind of figure out the vibes of other bookstores? How would you suggest?
They're like, and it's something that I did when I was, when I bought my bookstore, of just finding as many bookstores on social media as I could to follow. And it was, what do I want to turn this bookstore into that I purchased somewhat on a whim? And I was able to connect like Literati Bookstore. I
Oh,
have a
yeah.
lot of influences in my store from their store. White Whale Bookstore in Pittsburgh is another one that they actually opened just before I did. But the way that they were building out their space, it had a lot of inspiration from them. So if you just, it's easy enough if you're on BookTok or Bookstagram to just find the bookstores and just see what kind of books they're carrying, what kind of books they're promoting. See if your book connects on that level.
Yeah.
It's a process, but it does make a difference when you're making that outreach.
Yeah. And it'll save your hand cramping from writing 1,000
Yeah,
handwritten
yeah, yeah, yeah.
notes. Oh, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing all of this with me. I guess just as we're wrapping up, if you could sit down with a group of major publishers and explain anything to them about what's at stake with direct selling or book selling in general. What would you want them to understand that they might currently be missing?
I would want them to look at the long-term impact. Like, I feel like just in the world that we live in, everything is very short-term gains and short-term outlook. But just in terms of the long-term strategy, like maybe like there's been so many scares of TikTok going away. So if you are upsetting a ton of independent bookstores by utilizing this sales force that may end up going away or changing drastically, probably not the best thing to do, but just the ways in which you're hurting the people that are trying to champion your books, I don't think it's worth it for that smaller margin that you may be making off of that. And maybe they're not even looking at it from a margin standpoint, but just, oh, this is a fun way to sell books to people directly. But it like, remove the fun and look at how it's hurting the people that are your partners, that are trying to sell your books to customers.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Great for people to hear. support your local and indie bookstores. Where can people find you who are looking for you?
We are, it's 124 Chautauqua Avenue in Lakewood, New York. We're very close to the Chautauqua Institution between Buffalo and Pittsburgh, but we are at Good Neighbor Books on all of the social media things.
So, JD, you sent serial killer letters to bookshops, huh?
I did, and I actually pulled one out, and it's on the table in front of me, but I'm afraid to show it to you because if I move, then my cable is going to come loose and my microphone's not going to work.
I think you can do
Yeah, so what I did, you know, when I, you know, when that book was the fourth monkey or that series was coming out, I reached out to my local bookstore, and I asked them to collect. I gave them a box. I said, collect everything you get from publishers, from booksellers for like the next week. I just want to see what it is. And like they were just throwing it away anyway. So instead of throwing it in the garbage, they dropped it into this box for me. So I got that box. I took it home, and like literally every publisher was just sending postcards, you know, for every book. There were small postcards, there were big postcards, but they were all postcards. You know, so the person sorting through the mail basically got a glimpse of it and they just dropped it into the garbage. So ultimately what I did is in Fourth Monkey, there's a serial killer letter, a letter that the serial killer writes to the police. So I wrote it out because my handwriting looks like very much like a serial killer. It's horrible handwriting. But I wrote it out on paper. And we printed that on the front of this sheet. And then on the backside, we included the sales data for the book. And then we stuffed all of those in envelopes because I noticed that envelopes actually got open, you know, because they didn't know what it was. And then we mailed those out to every bookstore and every library in the country. So these people received an envelope. You know, they had to open it to figure out what it was. They took it out and it starts, you know, it's basically a letter from a serial killer. And, you know, at some point they realized that it was marketing material. They would flip it over and they would see the stuff on the back. But that spurred a huge amount of sales, you know, just because it was something different from what everybody else was doing. Meanwhile, in today's world, everybody is still sending postcards, you know, so
yeah.
They're not doing anything different.
Yeah, apparently booksellers don't appreciate postcards. So,
well, I mean, think about your own mail. You know, you go pick it up from the mailbox. You come into the kitchen or wherever. You know, you throw away the circular ads from Target and Walmart, and you know, like all, there's certain stuff you don't even glance at it. Like as soon as you realize what it is, it goes in the garbage. You know, and they handle stuff the same way. It's like deleting, you know, messages in your inbox and your email.
Yeah, it was an interesting perspective because, you know, in a lot of the communities that I'm in, that's what people talk about. Send a postcard because it doesn't cost very much, which is true, but also it's apparently not effective. So you're just kind of wasting that money. So you got to think of something different, I guess. Yeah, you know, they said they appreciate handwritten notes and you knowing a little bit about the shop. So getting on that social media, checking out the shops actually. Writing something might do you more favors than sending a postcard.
Yeah, I mean, for every author, I just encourage you go out to your local bookstore. You know, if you don't already know the owner, get to know the owner. But talk to them about this. You know, ask them what they get. You know, what works. You know, to promote a book, what doesn't. Because they'll tell you. And like, you don't have to guess at this stuff. You can get it right from the bookstore.
Yeah,
that's good advice. Yeah. I specifically asked them, what do you get that irritates the crap out of you? Like, what would you like to never get again?
Well, honestly, it's the same stuff. You know, like the postcards are a big problem. Bookmarks, calendars, pens, pencils, you know, those same things that every author does. You know, if everybody else is doing it, it's not going to work. You need something that's basically just communicating the same message, but in a different way that they haven't seen.
Yeah.
That's why I send severed fingers.
Perfect.
There you go.
But I was only able to do it 10 times.
So we talked a bit about why publishers might be moving to direct sales. You know, not clear speculation, of course, that it's always money, or maybe they're just jumping on a trend because that's fun to do. What do you think about that? Why do you think publishers might be moving towards direct sales?
I think it's for the reasons you just said. They're seeing it working for indie authors, and they've always chased indie authors. You know, they're always a couple of years behind, but they tend to chase those trends. But you know, like in my opinion, they're not thinking it through because booksellers are, you know, they're hand selling their titles. So you've got a debut author that's got a book that's coming out. You know, if you get in front of the right booksellers, they're going to hand sell that title. They're going to put it, you know, in front of people. They're going to get readers to pick it up. That's an invaluable resource. And you know, if they realize that you're selling that book direct and cutting them out, Not only are they going to not hand sell your book anymore, but they're probably going to, you know, kind of shun the title and possibly that publisher. You're putting yourself into a corner. So this is a very short-term strategy. I think it'll line their bank accounts for a little while, but the losses that they're going to get from bookstores, you know, no longer supporting them, that's going to be very problematic in a couple of years if they continue.
Yeah. I keep thinking about this, and I'm like, well, what would happen if publishers just went direct sell? What would happen to indie bookstores? My indie bookstore, you know, they carry a few of the top titles, but not many. It's more of those mid-list debuts, people that aren't so discovered yet. So I was like, well, if all of us, every single debut, mid-list, or, you know, top performing author like Stephen King and James Patterson went direct sale through their publisher, does that affect big box stores? If the top, you know, authors aren't selling, does it affect indie bookstores? Does everything just collapse? I can't wrap my head around it. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't see it collapsing if you're like one of the things that Bob does really well is he's very in touch with his local community. Yeah. And that's what supports his store, that, you know, people go to that store not only to buy a book, but because they like the environment, they like, you know, the people, they like, you know, the information that they receive. You know, that's a huge leg up. Those people aren't going to go away. You know, certain people only buy their books at Walmart, certain people only buy their books online. Mm-hmm. So honestly, like, I think the one publisher that's really going to get hurt by the direct sales thing might be Amazon, you know, the online sources, because now people are just, you know, clicking somewhere else, possibly buying it for a little bit cheaper, if that's at all possible. You've got to double down on what's working, and it always turns out to be the human element in all these different things.
Yeah, but this is a kind of a good time for indie authors to, if TradPub is going to pivot to direct sale, then indie authors need to pivot to pressing indie bookstores to carry the books.
Wouldn't that be something if we went that way?
I would love to see that. Yeah. We have here in the Austin area, there's Book People is a big local, indie bookstore. And they actually have an entire section for indie authors, but it's kind of, you kind of got to hit certain numbers to get on their shelf or whatever. But I wonder if, if we started kind of seeing a decline, like if certain publishers were doing this, I wonder then if stores like that would be more open to putting more indie titles on their shelves. Mm-hmm. And I think they could do great. I mean, they kind of lean into the local, they like everything local, you know, Austin's a big, like, buy local kind of place. Most places are, I think now. So, you know, that's the argument you need to be making with these guys when you pitched them. I'm local. Want to buy local, and I'll support you and you support me.
Yeah, support your events.
There's a couple pieces to that though that you've got to unpack. So when I sell book, like hardcover books, paperback books, that kind of thing, they're deeply discounted for the bookstores. They get 50 to 55% off on all of those, and they're already cheap because of the way that I'm printing through Simon and Schuster. So you know, most indie authors, they're going through Ingram Spark, they're printing one at a time. So they don't have those profit margins in there. A lot of them don't do the discount to bookstores. So that's going to cut you out immediately if you're not doing that. So somehow the print cost needs to come down. I could see this maybe working, but you know, I think indie authors would need to consider printing in bulk or other things to try and get the profit margins where they need to be for it to be attractive for the bookstore owners.
Yeah, that's always been a challenge for the indie author side is, you know, because we don't typically carry inventory. Like we don't typically have a warehouse full of books that we can do this with. And if you buy enough copies in bulk, you can get the price breaks and things that would make it worthwhile for you to offer that yourself. But the, you know, most indie authors can't really afford to do that. So yeah, that's a puzzle piece to solve. I need to figure that out so that I can make millions of dollars on that idea. Let me figure that out. I'll be working on that, guy. You guys keep talking.
The magic number is 16. Like I've learned, like the big printers print everything like 16 copies at a time. So even when you're printing in bulk, if you're doing 5,000, like 16 or 32, like it's got to be a multiplication of 16 in order for it to work.
I'm just gonna start running it off of my like HP printer here in the house and just staple it together.
Oh, that's cost effective.
Yeah,
that ink is probably more expensive.
You're right. Yeah, you're not wrong.
So one of the things that we didn't talk about, but he had said online that I thought was interesting, was if traditional publishers go to direct sales, how do those numbers get counted for lists like the New York Times bestsellers list? Who's counting them? How can you trust those? Like that creates all sorts of issues.
Yeah, we're saying we're so indie authors are kind of bumping against that now, and the general answer to that is I don't care, which I think is the wrong approach. And I'm not going to name names, but I know a few really big names in the indie sphere who are like, I don't care, I'm making all the money, whatever, you know, who cares about discoverability? I think that's the wrong approach because there is definitely going to be a ceiling on what you can do with direct sales. Unless you are just, if you're spending Amazon levels of money on marketing, then sure, you know, own the whole process. But that it's problematic to try to do it that way. And I just don't, I think long term it's a bad plan. That's why I haven't really leaned in on the direct sales thing like everyone else has yet.
Well, you're basically trading one thing for another, right? So like the New York Times list is a sales tool. You know, it sells a lot of books if you hit that list. But you know, like they market like their entire effort when putting out a book is to hit that list. So if they pivot, if they're selling direct, then that effort is going to change completely. You know, they're not going to be targeting indie bookstores anymore that report to that list. That's completely gone. They may or may not care. You know, like I think a lot of it has to do with the author. Like once you've already got that, you know, New York Times bestseller moniker that you could throw on a book, you don't necessarily have to hit the list again. You know, you could put that on the cover of every book, and it becomes a sales tool that you could use everywhere. So, you know, maybe for a debut, they might try to hit the list, but for somebody who's already got that, you know, reputation, who's already out there, you know, an existing audience, you know, that might be where the direct sales actually makes sense.
Okay. Lots of interesting things to think about. We'll see how it goes. Any other last thoughts on how people can support indie bookstores or your favorite way to support indie bookstores?
Christmas is coming. Get in there and buy some books for people.
Fair enough. Talk to your booksellers. They're nice people.
My niece, who's 22 years old now, for the first time since I've known her, asked for a novel for Christmas. So I rushed to make sure she had that book. So I think we're seeing a thaw or a turn or something. I mean, I've got this vibe right now that things are swinging back our way. That's what I've decided.
Books for everyone this holiday season. Get them
Everyone
from
gets
your
books.
indie bookstore. Visit your indie bookstore. Attend an event. Pitch an event.
And vinyl.
No more vinyl in my house, please.
I
No.
know. I've decided to rebuild my collection, so I'm gonna be
There's
asking
honestly
for it.
something refreshing about, you know, because I've been streaming music for years now. And like we just built this bar in our house with a pool table and stuff. And we've got a CD player built into the jukebox. So like I've been throwing CDs on there and like just listening to a full CD, you know, which sounds fantastic. But like there's something, I don't know what it is about it. And that's not really analog, but it's kind of the same vibe as vinyl. You
Well,
know, there's
yeah.
just something nice about just putting an album on and listening to it from start to finish without any kind of weird interruptions going
Yeah,
on.
there
And I
is.
don't know if this is the way they do it today, with albums, but I mean, you know, there was a time where the album was constructed. It was cultivated, right? Curated. They put songs together that went together, to complete a sound or complete a story. And that's what I liked about the whole thing. But you know, with the infinite playlist, you don't really get that.
Yeah, I actually really like listening to the vinyl. Please, nobody tell my husband because I think we have about 1,000 of them. But it is great. It makes a nice atmosphere.
We'll do a whole other episode on analog experience. We'll do
Perfect.
that.
All right. JD, who's up next week?
Next week, we've got Mark Tavani coming on. Mark is a former senior editor at Putnam, and a few years ago, he made a major career pivot and became an agent. He's always had his ear to the, you know, on the pulse of publishing. I can't wait to hear what his thoughts are on where he thinks things are going for 2026. So, Mark Tavani.
Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.